Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Renee. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. Well, today is Bullies to Buddies Day. And the part I like most about doing this workbook is it always relates to so many of the things that we talk about on the show. Of course, yesterday's show was a little different because we talked about exorcism and a little bit about the paranormal and the fact that we believe that in some cases those kind of issues, problems, are not detected properly. And I actually got a phone call from somebody last night who talks about being able to do exorcisms. This person is not any kind of clergy person, but they are gifted in the realm of, being able to sense things. They are Reiki healing, work with animals and people all the time. And she told me some interesting things last night, so I'm probably going to have her talk one day on the show. But let's move on to Bullies and Buddies, and let's bring in Shell. It seems like we never get but maybe two pages done in the workbook. Good morning, Shell.
Good morning, Rainey.
How are you doing today?
Good. I mean, we're really giving all the different nuances of all the different things covered in the book, and I think it's interesting that we only cover a short amount of reading space as we go through the book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because everything can really be discussed. I mean, you know, everything is, and everything pertains to so many of the things that we talked about already. Between relationships, of course, that is a lot of information in this book regarding relationships.
Right,
and
right.
Misunderstanding different people and all the things that we talk about all the time. I even have seen some correlation to the shows that we've done about hoarders, because so many of the people that we've talked about that we've either seen on the show or have contacted me later to say, you know, I think I might be a hoarder, have other issues that often have to do with social acceptance and being socially adept. So it is a big circle, right? So
yep,
it was
yep.
A very good phone call last night, though. This is somebody we both know. I won't say her name on the air until she comes on the air at some point in time and introduces herself. But according to her, she says she has actually conducted some of these deals with people, some exorcisms with especially young people. So
I know, and I don't think it'd be the same person, but I know somebody that you and I also both know who recently performed an exorcism, and it was done kind of on the spur of a moment. Somebody in front of her started acting out of place. They were in the middle of some sort of an energetic workshop, and this individual started acting out of character and actually started. The individual who was conducting the workshop is a sensitive and could see that there was something else there. It was more than just the person, and they started praying. It took them hours to finally effect relief for this person, but it finally did happen, and everybody was exhausted at the end of it, but you could feel the difference in the room, and it was permanent, and then they cleared the area. But it took hours to finally be successful to get this person okay.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was true in a lot of the stories that I read, too, about the other thing that was mentioned to me last night, and I am thinking that we should maybe do a show on that, and that's Kabbalah, the Kabbalah beliefs. And I think it would be interesting to do a show about that. I am not, I'm aware of it, and I'm aware of the fact that there's a lot of show business people involved in Kabbalah. I think it would be fun to do a show on that. Have you ever done any research on that?
I've touched on it when I was studying to become an Assyrian minister. We had touched on Kabbalah. I'm by no means an expert. I can't really explain it. From what I understand, it's a belief system, but not a religion. It's which is kind of an odd thing to say, but it's a little bit more. It's different than what most people think it is, let's put it that way. And I'm not really adept at explaining it, but if we're going to do a show on it, then I'll get out some of my texts and quickly re-review them. I know the impression I was left with about Kabbalah, and some of it is even based on law of attraction and things like that. It does have to do with your thought processes and how you actually create the life you live by the way you think about the life you live. So it's based on... like I said, it's not really a religion. It's a belief system and a thought process, from what I understand about it.
Well, and you and I are both open to that. I think it would be interesting. So we'll plan on doing that. Tomorrow we'll do the the Friendly Witch Doctor show. But
and I think there's a Kabbalah center here in South Florida, not far from where we are, that does free workshops. I used to hear the commercials all the time on the radio. I don't really listen to the radio anymore, but I did Google it and I found it. And it's down in, I think it's, I don't know, it's south. I don't know if it's as far south as Miami, but I know it's in the southern part of South Florida. And but they hold weekly workshops. It's either weekly or biweekly workshops, so they don't charge anything for it.
Mm-hmm. Well, that'd be maybe we'll do that. Maybe we can get the person that I talked to last night to introduce us to it.
Yep.
Because they know it. So okay, well that sounds like fun. We'll work on that while we're off the air. Did you get any feedback on yesterday's show?
No, I didn't. I mean, I did speak to a couple people about it as far as I said, hey, did you hear what we did today's shows about and that kind of stuff, and they thought it was interesting. But one of the individuals I spoke to was the individual that had already gone through this, so I knew I was speaking to somebody who, you know, experienced it and kind of knew about it. And it's a very, very, like everything else we talk about, it's so expansive, because there's so many different variations of it, you know, different ways a person can be affected by it. Sometimes, you know, exorcisms are needed. Sometimes just blessings are needed. Sometimes you have to go to a shaman, because there's so many different energetic influences out there. And I think that's the main thing that I've gotten from all the research I'm doing, is that there are so many influences out there. When you talk about bullying, which is interesting because everything we talk about somehow can affect something else we talk about. But when you're talking about bullying and you're talking about somebody being mean or cruel or just unkind, you have all different levels there. There can be so many different reasons for it. It can be that they have a lousy diet and it just makes them feel bad, and because they feel bad, they're irritable. It can be that they're being abused. It can be that they're being influenced by something energetic. So when you understand that there can be so many sources for a person's behavior coming from things they're going through, coming from their physical health or lack of, or coming from energetic influences, it really starts showing you that learning a little bit more about self-awareness, being able to really read what your true self is, and when you're not feeling like your true self, realizing that something that you can control is making you feel off. And then that's when a person gains more control over their life. I can tell when I'm feeling off because I ate something that didn't agree with me. I can tell when I'm feeling off because somebody said something to me that didn't hit me right, and I allow myself to dismiss it, you know, because I'm very self-aware now. It took many years to get there, but I can tell when I'm being affected by something. I've walked into buildings and instantly just didn't feel good. So I know that something negative happened there, whether it was somebody had a bad argument or something violent, but I can pick up on even things that are energetic that are impacting me, you know. And it's interesting when you can become that self-aware, and everybody can, because you can almost start pinpointing why you've shifted out of a good place.
I think most of us that, if you just feel and listen every now and then, I think you'd be shocked to see how many things can come to you. The problem is most are caught up in the everyday, got to get ready to go to work, got to organize something for dinner tonight, got to do this, got to get the kids to school, got to do this. You're rushing so much, you miss a lot. Hence the old saying about stop and smell the roses or the flowers or the daisies or whatever it used to be. But I believe in that too, and I believe every now and then meditation for me way back when was just sitting and being quiet and not trying to empty my mind of all the things that were stressing me or worrying me or making me angry or all of those emotions, and just getting rid of them.
Right.
And I know I've told the story on the air about when they told me that I should be on Valium, and I said, are you crazy? You know, I'm watching this. Are you out of your mind? So I would sit and drink a very, very hot cup of tea and only think about how hot the tea was, because it was so hard for me to empty out my mind and stop that mechanism that spins in our heads. And if I could concentrate on just the fact that I was burning my own mouth with tea, everything else seemed to stay away for a few minutes until I got to that place of calm. So it is
what meditation is. That's why some people will use a candle flame. Some people will actually monitor their own breathing, so that's their focal point, is their breathing. Or they'll have a little water fountain, and they listen to the water. They'll close their eyes and listen to the water, or they'll watch the water. But that is meditation. Without knowing it, you did it properly, because your focal point was your cup of tea. But what it is you get a single point of focus, and it allows your mind to kind of expand and relax a little bit.
So there are ways to do those things. And like I said, if you can envision a clock, I always was amazed by the inside of a clock, how you could see the gears running into each other and everything, and keeping the time for the minute hand and the hour hand and the second hand, and how they're all involved together and working together. If you can think of your mind like that and realize that you're just slowing down those gears until you can actually bring yourself to a place of understanding more and being more aware of what's going on around you, it's very important to you. And a lot
right.
of us don't ever do that, and it's not good for you. So, all right, so let's get into the next chapter in our Bullies to Buddies book is Friends versus Enemies. Sometimes that's hard to decipher. Doesn't sound like it would be, but often it is. Anti-bully programs and policies are about getting kids to treat each other like friends. Unfortunately, in psychology, we don't learn to think in terms of friends and enemies. There are psychological models that think in terms of things like parent, adult, child, transactional analysis, or ID, ego, and superego psychoanalysis, but rarely friend, enemy. But that's really the key to good relationships, getting people to treat us like friends rather than enemies. If you want people to treat you like a friend, you have to treat them like friends, even when they treat you like an enemy. Victims are only aware that their bullies are treating them like enemies. I'm going to read that again. Victims are only aware that their bullies are treating them like enemies. They are not aware that they are treating their bullies like enemies. And that's those really fine lines. And, of course, we realize that's true because everything we talk about is that. And but that's one of those simple facts. Typical anti-bullying programs and policies by defending victims from bullies unwittingly intensify the enemy roles. Then we are mystified why bullying is becoming a more serious problem. And I agree with that.
Right.
We talked about that over a year ago, the fact that we both felt like it's much worse now than it ever was. But then in a year's worth of research and all the going back that we've done and all the research that we've done in years gone by, and then, of course, that conjured up lots of personal memories for both of us, we realized that's really not true. It's probably no different than it ever has been. But now it's got everybody's attention. And once something gets everybody's attention, it seems bigger than life. So the fact that we've concentrated on the bully kind of makes it a stronger entity. It almost makes it more important and more, stronger, just stronger and bigger than life. So typical anti-bullying programs and policies by defending victims from bullies unwittingly intensify the enemy roles. Now, that sentence is really important because that's exactly what it does. And one of the most important things we found out when we started researching about bullies is that we found out that most bullies are being bullied. So it's kind of a vicious circle, right? I mean,
right.
1 minute...
Or at very least, they feel that they're a victim somehow. Whether they're being bullied or not, maybe they're not getting enough attention from their parents and they feel... they feel that they're not as important, or they feel that they're being ignored, and it can make some kids angry. You know, that sense of I'm not as important, and it just makes them not comfortable with who they are, and then they lash out on other kids. So they either feel that they're being bullied, or they feel somehow that they're victimized in one way or another, and it brings up that discontent and that anger, and then they take it out on other kids.
Mm-hmm. And I think that is really at the very crux of all of it. And I think that being able to realize that it's, I don't know, maybe we need to dispense with that whole word, but we do need to get a handle on the fact that it is a circle. And remember that commercial that was on TV years ago? I honestly don't even remember what it was about, but you saw a fish swimming in the water, and he swims up to a littler fish and eats him. And he's feeling real proud of himself, and next thing you know, comes a bigger fish, and the bigger fish eats that fish. And it goes on like that, and until you get, you know, to the gigantic whale, and of course the whale could eat all of them, and pretty much does, just because, you know, it works like almost an assembly line of eating. So at the end of the day, who's the bully? The bully is momentarily the biggest fish, right?
Yeah.
And it doesn't last, though, you see. It doesn't last because there's always a bigger fish. Always, always a bigger fish. So it really is more of a circle than it is an epidemic of just mean children or mean people. It's really a circle that goes around. So Chapter 7 says winning versus losing. And I have mixed emotions about this chapter, so we'll talk about it. We talk about bullies and victims or bullies and targets. It is more helpful as well as scientifically objective to talk about winners and losers. Many mental health professionals don't like thinking in terms of winning and losing. They think it trivializes problems, or they believe that life should not be about competition, but only about cooperation. Mm. It is impossible to understand the bully-victim dynamic if you are not willing to think in terms of winning and losing. The bullies are winning, which is why they feel great. The victims are losing, which is why they are miserable. Victims look and feel like losers. And a common insult is, you're a loser. Victims are desperate to know how to win. The truly nice thing is that when they learn to treat their bullies like buddies, they create a win-win situation. When they know how to not be victims, their bullies are no longer bullies. Now, that paragraph is in bolder print, and, of course, it's at the very crux of the whole problem. But when they talk about it's impossible to understand the bully-victim dynamic if you are not willing to think in terms of winning and losing. The bullies are winning, which is why they feel great, and the victims are losing, which is why they feel miserable. I guess I see the correlation.
I think we're talking about winning and losing, but not in a competitive way. People hear winners or losers, and they automatically think of sports and competitions and things like that. But it is, you know, when somebody is well-liked, they say, oh, he's such a winner. They're not talking about sports agility or ability or anything like that. They're talking about, you know, you say, oh, he has a winning smile, right? So we use the terms winner or loser to describe somebody's persona to us. Somebody walks up to you and they're kind of a jerk to you and they walk away and you go, oh, what a loser, you know. So I think a lot of times people hear winner or loser and they automatically go to competition, but we do classify the way people treat us as either somebody being a winner or a loser. And I think, to me, I think that's what he's getting at.
Yeah, well, that's certainly what he's getting at. But again, you know, I feel like I can see, for me, it's a little bit convoluted because I can see a bully picking on somebody else, and that somebody else, let's go to adults because adults are more apt to feel this way than a child. A child doesn't. The thought process isn't going this deep yet, especially when we're talking about elementary school or something. But say somebody comes up to you and gets in your face in the workplace, and he's really bullying you. He's like, oh, for God's sakes, you know, why do you always have to take up the whole meeting? Everybody always has to listen to your point of view, so it's always more important than anything else anybody has to say. And really, you know, really knocks you down. You feel like you're doing a good job and you feel like you're participating because very often nobody else is. So you speak up to give your input. And then somebody attacks you after the meeting and says you don't know what you're talking about and you just like to hear your own self talk. I mean, I've seen this particular interaction on several occasions. So now that person looks at the person who just accosted them after the meeting and says, feels pretty secure about themselves and says, what a loser, you know. But the person that just attacked the other person with the words that they said, they feel like they're attacking because the person they're attacking is a loser, right? I mean, can you see
right.
how they both think that about the other one? So that kind of negates the whole loser winner scenario once you become adults, because an argument very often won't ensue unless you think you're smarter than the other person or vice versa. Don't you think that's true?
Well, the way I look at it, think of it this way and tell me if you agree or disagree. All right. As far as I'm concerned, you can't have bullying happen unless you have both sides of the equation. You have somebody who feels like a winner and somebody who feels like a loser. In the scenario that you just described, if the person who was the bully approached the other individual and that other individual felt like a loser, okay, was insecure somehow, and it took everything they had to speak up in this meeting, and then this person berated them for it, there could be bullying happen because the other person might succumb to that and then feel horrible about what they just did and embarrassed and not want to speak up again. Okay, then you have bullying taking place. But if the person that spoke up in the meeting doesn't go there, isn't affected by what the bully is trying to say to them, then there actually was no bullying that took place because you don't have both sides of the equation. You don't have a winner and a loser mentality. I'm not talking about that these people are winners or losers. I'm talking about what their mentality is. The guy who's bullying feels self-righteous and annoyed at the person that they were going to take it out on. You know, oh, my God, I have to sit there and listen to everything this loser had to say. So they feel that they have one up on them. If, in fact, the person who did all the talking that the attempt to bully was being made at feels confident and was like, well, you know, hey, I had a lot of important stuff to say and, you know, and just kind of ignores what the other person is saying, well, you know, you're entitled to your opinion and walks away from them and isn't affected, then there was no actual bullying that took place. But like I said, if the person also feels like they're a loser, so now those roles are coming out, okay, then there would have been bullying because they probably wouldn't have reacted properly. They probably would have acted in a way that was vulnerable. They would have been maybe fearful or apologetic and then maybe embarrassed, and all those emotions would have been stirred up. So I think it's not that one person is a winner and one person is a loser, but those are the roles they have to feel like in order to open the door for bullying to take place.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's the whole concept, is that if somebody attacks you, you get defensive. I mean, that's a pure fact. That's not conjecture. If somebody attacks you, you become defensive. So if you do walk out of a workplace and you feel pretty proud about all the things you just talked about because they're your beliefs and you know your position, you know your job, and you talk like that and you give the input that you give and then somebody comes out because, number one, what's wrong with the person that attacks you? He's jealous. He's jealous of the fact that you spoke out, more than likely. So In essence, he feels like you bullied him in the meeting because he didn't get a chance to talk, even though he didn't volunteer to talk.
Right.
For me, it's all about how you are feeling. And I really don't believe that in a scenario like that with adults and sometimes even with kids, there's a distinction between bully and victim. I really don't think there is. There could be to somebody who is watching, somebody who can say to somebody, I just saw this altercation out in the playground, and Shelley was bullying Renee. When actuality, it might have been the other way around, because that's one of the other problems that I see in a school, because until an action gets really elevated, then there is nobody paying attention. You know, does that make sense to you? Like, unless, you know, like maybe I walked up to you and said very quietly, everything you said in there was ridiculous and stupid. You sounded like you don't even know what the hell you're talking about. And you swing around and start yelling at me. Who's everybody going to think is the bully?
Right. Right.
So I think that happens a lot in young kids. I know it happens in adults because you almost always have somebody who is sneaky and underhanded who tries to defame or break down somebody that they're jealous of. So I like the fact that Izzy explains to us the difference between the loser and the winner. I do like that. But, of course, it's still all a matter of really how you feel. And, of course, he teaches us that, too. So I understand where he's going with all this stuff, but it opens my mind to, like, so many different scenarios that I think to myself, how are you gonna put a label on either person in a situation like that? You really can't. So anyway, I think, you know, I like the idea that trying to teach kids to not fall into the victim mode. And, of course, the victim, somebody can push you into feeling like a victim or a loser with their words or their actions. It doesn't mean you are. It just means, you know, you have to kind of like pick yourself up, dust yourself off, and change it. And
bottom line is, you said something interesting. You said that sometimes somebody can make you feel like a victim or a loser with their words. I don't agree with that. I think that you already are there, and that's why their words kind of amplify some of your insecurities. And the reason I say that is my sister and I were brought up by the same parents. We're less than a year apart, very close in age, and yet she would get very, very upset and hurt by things that people would say, and my sister had deep insecurities because of my father. My father was very cruel to her, so she had these insecurities dealing with other people. I, on the other hand, had a personality where I'm very self-confident, and I didn't have that need for approval. I had this sense about myself. Now, remember, we're both brought up, same household, same parents, same circumstances, and yet my system would go into victim mode because of how damaged her self-esteem was because of my father, and I could basically turn a deaf ear to it, you know, and not be affected by criticisms that people had for me. Unless I cared about somebody, then it meant something to me. But if just random people came up and tried to bully me, and it did happen, it didn't affect me because I wasn't already there. So nobody could make me feel like a loser or a victim because that mindset wasn't already there in me for them to play on. So that's why I'm saying I don't think words can just bring that out in somebody. I think they have to have some level of vulnerability where the bully would then tap into those emotions.
Well, see, and you and I differ in that respect because I think everybody, no matter how secure they appear on the outside, has insecurities. And I do think that that has to do with how you can fall into the victim mode. I agree with you. But I also believe that no matter who we are and no matter what the situation is, some of those insecurities are there because none of us ever feel so sure about our convictions, our feelings, because we can be swayed in different directions. And that's okay. You're supposed to be like that because if you don't sway, you break. So I think that it's very rare to find somebody who can't be talked into the fact that they're a loser. So even though I think if you walk away and you're strong and you're capable, you can think to yourself, you know, what a jerk, you know, and you can rationalize it and you can get back to a good place. But in the middle of a conversation like that, it's hard to rationalize because you're both, your heads are spinning too fast and you're saying mean things, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I like to think that most of us who are sure of ourselves and have some self-esteem can pull ourselves back out of that victim mode, but I truly believe that you can be pushed in there without even knowing you've been pushed in. So I do think that that's one of the lessons that we have to teach kids, that if somebody says something to them and they question that, like the kids with abnormalities, like the kids with weight issues or skin issues or any of those kind of things, the truth is the truth. So if they know, Spikey and I talked about that this week when we talked about picking on people. He said, you remember that he suffered with that cystic acne, and he would wear a hoodie to school. And because his neck and like right behind his ears and down his back and everything would be one of the worst parts. and he would wear the hoodie to keep sunshine away from it, various things, and people would say things to him. And teachers would give him a ration because you're not supposed to keep your hoodie up and things like that. And I said, well, I remembered that happening to him. And I said, actually, some fresh air might be good for it. Are you embarrassed about the way it looks? And he goes, yeah, of course I am, Graham. You know, so but I think he made it through that because he recognized the fact that what was going on with his face and his neck and his back and everything embarrassed him, number one, made him feel insecure, and he knew when somebody said something to him, they were telling the truth. So he was trying to deal with that, but he tried to deal with it, you know, like a grown-up, which I was always very proud of him about that.
Right,
and, of course,
right.
He's outspoken and is not ashamed of anything he does, whether it's right or wrong. He feels like he's made a conscious decision to do this, and that's what he's going to do. If you don't like it, that's your prerogative. So that's how he survived that part of his life, and it wasn't easy on him. Because I don't know if you remember how bad it was, but it was awful. I mean, they would be, you know, and I'm sure.
Yeah, no, I remember. I remember how bad it was for him.
But when we talked about it the other day, he said, you know, I just had to deal with it. I knew they were right. They weren't just saying something mean to me that wasn't true, that I could say you're full of it. You know, that's not true. They were right. It was true. So I just had to learn how to deal with it in a different way. So that's a big lesson for people, because it is easy to say to somebody, you know, you don't know what you're talking about, you know, but when saying is true, it brings... You have to have a different kind of strength for that, I guess is the point I'm making. And it doesn't make you a victim. It doesn't make you a loser. It makes you somebody who is strengthening themselves of outside influences, like the kids that we talk about with birth defects or you know, all those kind of things. I love, too, this is kind of on a side note, I love recently they're doing commercials and things like that. There's a young man who's a Swiffer commercial who's helping his wife, and he's lost his arm.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I love that commercial.
What I mean, at first when I saw it, I thought, you know, my instinct was to feel bad. You know, I don't want to lose my arm, so it made me feel bad. But then I watched the commercial, and I thought, what? This is like leaps and bounds upward.
Well, especially because he says, you know, he says it's hard to do things when you only have one arm, but I think I still do this better than her, you know. I mean, he can even joke about the fact that he lost one of his arms and that evidently he used to have two arms because he says, you know, he talks about how he can't do as much as he used to. So evidently he wasn't born without the arm. Something happened and he lost it. But he can make a joke out of it, and he's laughing at the end of it, and his little kid jumps into his arms, and I love that commercial for the same reason. There's so many different messages just in that little 60-second clip.
Mm-hmm. Well, and like I said, it opens that door that has always said no trespassing. It opens that door.
Mm-hmm.
Remember years ago, the actress, I almost had her name. Marilyn, Mary, she is deaf, and she's been on Law and Order. She's been on many shows.
Exactly who you're talking about. Yeah, her name does start with an M. I'm drawing a blank on it, too. I know exactly who you're talking about, though. She was on Dancing with the Stars.
Yes, exactly.
Which everybody thought was that she was able to feel the musical beats.
Yeah, she feels the vibrations. So that was another leap into acceptance for everyone, pretending that something isn't true. is amazing. And, of course, you and I have a favorite couple that we talk about all the time because they are unsighted, and they are two of the most amazing people I've ever met in my life.
Very independent.
Yeah, all these kind of things are opening up. So even though we seem to be in a bad place in a lot of different things, I love, well, the commercial with the interracial couple where she pours the Cheerios on Daddy's heart while he's sleeping.
Mm-hmm,
we talked
yep.
about it. Love it, love it. Now you're seeing families that are, you know, super mixed. And that's real life. And that's really
mm-hmm.
what's fun. So to pretend that it isn't is kind of ludicrous. But the one, the Swiffer commercial, I sat and watched it and I thought, it's about time. It is
mm-hmm.
about. So
look at things like the Special Olympics, for instance. That organization has been around for decades. When I lived up in New York, I used to volunteer for Special Olympics through the company I worked at. So we're going back like 30 years ago, but it's still around today. And they have a lot of children that are suffering with mongoloidism or mild retardation and things like that, kids that would generally be locked away. And now here they have them in competitions. They're out. The families are proud of them. They're showcasing their children. And if you go back decades ago, maybe 50, 60 years ago, people were still hiding their children if they suffered from one of these, you know, mental, I don't know what to call it. I don't know if to call it a disorder or illness or whatever like that. But when you have a mongoloid child or a retarded child, there used to be such a stigma on the family that they wouldn't even bring the child out of the house. And now, today, you have all these places where these children are actually being given the ability to live the same type of life as somebody else, even going into these sports competitions. So I really enjoyed working for these Special Olympics. It was fun seeing how they prepared for it and how they set the areas for the competitions and things like that, and to see the pride in the parents of bringing that, you know, those particular children up. And many of them had other healthy children that were there and having fun and cheering their brother or sister on. It was very, very heartwarming to see how these families could just integrate the child. It was just another child of them. This child had different talents. That's how they looked at it. Not that the child had special needs, but that the child had their own special talents. And it was very, very uplifting to watch the whole thing.
Well, look at the times that we spoke with Garrett Holub on the air, the young man who overcame so many afflictions and is a wrestler and has brought himself to a conditional shape that a lot of young boys would, you know, die to get to. And his grandfather, who is so proud, and his dad, who is so proud, and he has even done things that have changed laws. So, yeah, I think that we are moving forward very sadly.
Now that you mentioned, Rini, now that you mentioned Garrett, and this is probably a different show, obviously, but did we ever hear any update from them after the After the I don't know if you call it a fight or whatever, was canceled? Did anything ever come up?
Yeah, he's still working. They have a gym, and he teaches other boys who are struggling like he was to improve their mobility and their, you know, bodybuilding and things like that, and give them back maybe not give them back, that's the wrong thing to say, but give them some newfound strength, mind, spirit, and body strength. So, yeah,
oh.
I would say. And he has had a match. It wasn't as big as what they had hoped it would be. But I go to his website every now and then and see how things are going for him. And,
wow. Cool.
It's amazing. It's amazing. And anybody who wants to look, you can find him just under Garrett Holub, just like Olive, but with an H. And G-A-R-R-E-T-T
Holub, okay.
So, yeah, he's, yeah, I can't. I mean, he doesn't even, I mean, I barely know him, but I have such pride in how he has overcome so many challenges.
Wow.
To be, I you can't, he's like, you know, like Adam, our young friend Adam and Denise, that's,
mm-hmm.
he's in that caliber, you know. So
right.
I think that, and you know, whenever you meet somebody like that, it makes you wonder what you can do. Doesn't it make you think to yourself, you know, I always say to myself, you know, I could do this or I could do that, and then I think, what am I thinking? You know, I can't do that. Nobody's going to want me to be that person or do that thing because I'm just not smart enough, I'm not pretty enough, I'm not this, I'm not that. So we actually talk ourselves out of those kind of achievements because we're scared. And to overcome a fear like these people did, you know, like makes you almost be ashamed of yourself because we can achieve just about anything we want to achieve. But effort
right.
and stamina and, you know, perseverance has to be the name of the game. And these three people that Shelley and I have been, well, the one couple that we got to know very well, and, of course, Garrett, who is, like, blows me away. And then you see other things now, like the Special Olympics. That's a good thing to bring up because I, too, am really enamored by the parents that got their kids involved, the people that support it. It's an amazing thing, just like any kind of sport. Not because they're different and they're special, just because there's people that are getting involved in things to pushing themselves to a limit that they didn't think they could do. That's what's awesome. That's what's
well,
awesome.
And the whole thing is that's one of the reasons why I like watching, you know, like these, what do you call it, inspirational videos where you look at people that have succeeded in life, very successful, and then when you read their history, you realize that at some point, they were where you are now. Not everybody who is successful and wealthy and famous started out that way or grew up in a family that gave them a foot in. A lot of people struggled and struggled and struggled for many, many years against all odds with people telling them they weren't going to succeed, but they just had this passion and belief and kept at it and did finally succeed. You know, one of my favorite stories is about David Frost, the very, very famous, well, he's not so famous now, I mean, this is going back years ago, but right around the time when Nixon, when that whole Watergate fiasco hit the news, David Frost was a nobody. Nobody knew who he was. He was not famous in any way, shape, or form, but he almost lost everything setting up that interview with Nixon. And because he did, and because of a fluke, because I've watched the movie about that, it's a fascinating movie, he invested his entire life savings, like hundreds of thousands of dollars, because you had to pay to have an interview with the president. And he paid, he took his entire life savings, the interview got canceled twice, he thought he was going to have to go back with nothing. The first time he sat down with Nixon, Nixon shredded him, wouldn't answer him, humiliated him. He went back the next day for a follow-up interview, and he had centered himself and caught Nixon in an untruth, and then from there on out, he owned the interview. And Nixon evidently had a few drinks the night before, was not on his game, and everything just played out so that he ended up having this explosive interview. It hit the media everywhere, and he literally, this guy David Frost, became an overnight sensation. And he went from being literally broke and almost losing everything to every network wanting him. And he became like the name in network news from there on out. But it could have gone either way. And everybody, because people used to make comments that, you know, oh, he knew somebody or he did this. And he, no, no, he he risked everything. He risked everything. He risked losing his home, his livelihood. He risked everything for this interview, and it panned out because he didn't give up. Even after the first day where Nixon trashed him, he went back for a second helping and then got the interview flipped. So it just shows that if you persevere, if you believe in what you want to do, people really can succeed at anything as long as they keep their mindset there. So I like studying stories like that and reading about people like that, because the people that succeed were also told that they couldn't succeed. The only thing is they didn't let other people influence them. They went for their dreams anyway, and then you see all these wonderful success stories. So I like immersing myself in that, in those stories and in those true, I'm talking about true stories, not fictional. I love reading all these true stories because it really shows that as people, we can succeed at anything.
Well, and I remember that interview as well. And there was always something about David Frost that I found amusing. I thought he was had a great voice, and I liked the way he talked, period.
Mm-hmm.
His voice, you feel that way about a lot of people. A lot of people have great voices.
Mm-hmm.
And get your attention just when they start talking, whether they're saying anything wonderful or not. That's how I felt about him. And I agree
yeah.
with you. Of course,
yeah.
Nixon, somebody I didn't have a lot of respect for, I thought that was an awesome interview as well. And that does
mm-hmm.
show you perseverance and believing in yourself is the most important thing you can do for yourself, is by believing in yourself. Who else?
And the funny thing about that is that so many of the other reporters at the time were very critical of David Frost because, you know, they said, oh, that was a fluke. He was just lucky. He was at the right place at the right time, without realizing what he went through, what he sacrificed. It took him over 6 months to get that interview, the money he had to pay for it. And when you understand the backstory of how he got there, he deserved having that instant notoriety, because he did something that all those other news reporters could have done. He risked everything. He put himself out there. He put up his own money. He put up his own time. And he just was relentless. So he deserved to have that instant notoriety. But so many people didn't know the backstory of how he got there and said it was a fluke, and it wasn't a fluke. He made that happen for himself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought that was great. That was a good thing to remember today while we're talking about this, because it is about, you know, overcoming and knowing that you can do something and doing it. So,
right,
and of course,
exactly.
In regard, again, the bullying book pushed us off in a million different directions, because we can equate everything that Izzy's talking about in this book for kids can be transferred to everything that happens in our adult lives as well. It never changes. You still have to have self-esteem. You still have to believe in yourself. You still have to be able to take negative comments, negative reactions, and decipher them in your own head and choose whether or not they're going to change you or you're going to change them. It's really, really all up to you. I want to really quick do this one page, because he's got victim-proofing a school. And this is kind of interesting. So I'm just going to read it, because we probably won't have time to discuss it too much. But when I work with people or do presentations, I try desperately to avoid using the word bully. And I recommend you avoid using the word, too. Remember the categorization exercise. Bully is an insult, not a diagnosis. Just as we would never refer to a child as a wimp or a loser or a fool, we have no business talking about bullies either. I use the word bully in my written materials and in my seminars because the whole world is talking about bullies. In order to get people to pay attention to what I have to teach so that I can make a living, I need to use the word bully too. I will be thrilled when the use of the word bully is discontinued. Rather than trying to teach students to stop being bullies. The Bullies to Buddies Victim Proofing teaches kids how not to be victims. The advantages are almost always successful, does no damage to anyone, it increases everyone's emotional maturity and independence, it turns kids into friends, and it requires essentially no extra financial expenditure. Now, how true is all that? I mean, I love that.
I know, I love it too.
And because those are the things that often stop us from doing things. Those five things, fear of not being successful, fear of hurting someone else, the inability to discover your own emotional maturity and be independent. And it makes kids your friends, and that's a scary thing, too, making new friends. And it requires essentially no money, and that's a biggie as well. Schools throughout the modern world are busy trying to bully-proof schools when the real concern should be to victim-proof schools. It is victims who are suffering. It is victims that we don't want our children becoming. Amen. Well, I don't want them becoming bullies either, but that's the point, I guess. It is hard
right.
to teach students how not to be victims when the schools are waging war against bullies, for the war encourages kids to think and act like victims. Since at best, a school can have limited success with the popular anti-bully approaches, victims will never have their problem completely solved by schools' attempts to forbid anyone from bullying them. Now, that's so important, and we talk about this all the time. It is a big thing to feel somebody who's picking on you all the time. We get that. But it's like anything else. If somebody is... I don't know if I want to say this, but I'm going to say this. If somebody's coming after you with a knife, the best thing that's going to protect you from that knife is a suit of armor. Thick gloves, a mask, a suit of armor all over your body to stop that person from sinking a knife into your body, which a knife can do. So it's kind of the same thing. If you can put up your own defense mechanism and turn things around so that nobody wants to come after you and hurt you that way, then you not only save yourself, you save the other person as well. For me, that's the whole answer. That's the whole answer, and I think that's what Izzy is trying to teach us. He's trying to teach us that you have to protect yourself, but do it in a, first of all, non-victim mode, and you'd also don't want to be the aggressor because then you're just as bad as the person coming after you. So you
right.
have to learn how to put on that suit of armor sometimes. Sometimes you have to learn, like Spikey did, you have to figure out, I have to work on this because this is real. Garrett being told he couldn't do these things because of, of what was going on in his life and who he was, told him that he couldn't do it. He did it. So I think that's the big thing, and that's the big thing for all of us, even us grown-ups. If you think you want to do something, I hate to quote Nike, but do it. Do it.
Right.
Because really nothing can stop you at the end of the day.
Right. And if you choose to share your dreams with somebody and they put you down and they tell you it can't be done, then you have a couple of choices. Either don't share it with that person anymore, find somebody who believes in what you're trying to do so you have some support, or just don't talk to people about it anymore and make it happen, because that's what happens to a lot of people. They are inspired to do something, and then they mention it to somebody, and they're shot down, and they don't pursue it.
Exactly. Or not, maybe not shot down, but not supported. They don't
right.
get don't get the verbiage or the body language that says, you know, sure, why don't you try to do that? Why not?
Right.
You know? And that's important to most of us. You know, being supported is important to all of us. And it's okay if you're not being supported. It doesn't mean you're wrong. It doesn't mean you shouldn't try it. It just means that somebody else doesn't have that kind of faith in you. And why should they? They won't have that faith in you until you do.
Exactly.
Circle. So, okay, I want to thank everybody. As usual, Shell and I got off on a tangent. I hope some of the things that we talked about today can help anybody who's out there listening. So everybody out, go out and have a great day. God bless, and we will be back tomorrow. Thanks, Shell.
Thanks, Reen. Have a wonderful day, everyone.
Bye-bye.